don't think I could have said it better. I guess this isn't on. What? I'm trying to find some charged batteries for this. I couldn't have said it better. I hope you know the same things are true about you. And well, yeah, I won't give you any credit for the speech at UCC, except that, you know, you made some contribution to Craig along with most of us here. So, you know, there are no self-made men. There are some that think they've made themselves. But God made them, whether they acknowledge it or not. And so, yeah, I think Craig is everything that Clark said and more. And I think Judah is too. And all of you are. And so that, is this thing working now? Well, this is on. Wait a minute. Wait, what does it mean when the light's blinking? What? Meter. And have you ever discovered that if you have two batteries in your hand that are the same and you took one out of something and you took one out of a new box and they have the same expiration date on them, that it's hard to tell which one now is the new one? But he used a voltmeter to figure it out. But he had to go get another fresh battery to do it first. Anyway, so there's a lesson in this. My daughter went and got the mic for me, the box and the thing with the charger and the batteries. And have you ever thought you had something with you that you needed and then opened up the container it's in and found that it wasn't in there? That ever happened to you? That's never happened to anybody. Huh. Have you ever gotten out to a job site and realized you left a tool that you needed? Yeah, you and me, it's happened to these people. They never forget anything. I think there are a lot of people that have a box that they bought or that someone sold to them. And they've opened it up, and they think that what they needed is in the box. Sometimes there's something in there, sometimes there's nothing in there, but they're so convinced by the marketing that they just live as though whatever it was supposed to be is theirs and that it's going to work. Doesn't work. Clark mentioned some people that have been, my father used to use a phrase, when I first heard it, I didn't know what it meant. And he actually didn't tell me what it meant. It was a long, long time ago. He just spoke as though it was obvious. I'm hoping I have enough power in this thing. Oh, I was using the wrong password. So it's just another example. You think you're putting the right thing in, and then it doesn't work. You have to check and find out why. Anyway, I don't remember what the subject at hand was. I wasn't terribly old, probably in my teens. Anyway, my dad said, "You've been sold a bill of goods." You know what that means? You know what that means to be sold a bill of goods? What? Yeah, you've been taken. I think it may actually be worse than being sold swampland or desert land that was said to be, you know, a teeming garden of earthly delights. You know, you drive out there and you find it's a malaria-infested swamp or just desert. I'm still recovering from this week, I think. Anyway, in the case of a bill of goods, it's possible it could be nothing but a piece of paper. You got the thing that says you got all these things for whatever you paid, but it's never going to be delivered. It doesn't exist. They've got your money, and now you've got a piece of paper. If that's ever happened to you, you should put it in a frame, by the way, and keep it. Because if you get taken, especially if it's really expensive, you should have something to show for it. So you should really frame it and keep it. Put it on the wall, and then you become wiser, and then you use that to show other people that are about to buy something that isn't what they've been told. So Clark mentioned people that have been sold a bill of goods. That I hate to even try to imagine a day when the oddity and, you know, like, boy, that's weird, a man and a woman got married. I don't like to even think of that. I think that we may be closer to that than it looks. I heard something on the radio this week. I have to say, though, have you ever noticed if you listen to the radio or could be some video, everybody who's talking, have you ever noticed? All of them are human beings. Ever notice that? I hear people talking sometimes that I think don't actually notice that. I think they just have indignation that borders on hatred and then lapses over into hatred and total contempt. And it's the human being you should see. So there was an interview with this woman. She's a recording artist. One of her songs is called I Want to Be Your Sister. And it was actually written for her half-sisters, but she apparently didn't feel like she was a real sister to them. And the song is, you know, the refrain is, I want to be your sister, and it's, do you want to be mine? But in the process of listening to the interview, and the reason I said she's a human being is the thing is I noticed this is a real person with all kinds of real experiences. We had a serious drunk of a father who died early and who went through all kinds of crazy stuff with her family. And she's trying to work it out, and she's actually trying to work it out in her songs. And so I found her story to be kind of compelling. And so what I did when I heard her mention what she called genderless sisterhood was I actually just tried to understand how she got there and how she might get to someplace else. I wasn't angered, not at her. I just thought how sad it is that even relationships between sisters are now being thought of by some people as relationships that have nothing whatsoever to do with gender. And the interviewer, after she mentioned this, said, you know, I was just thinking about that this week. I thought, oh, they didn't know, but they're both thinking about genderless sisterhood. you know, like sisters that aren't women, I guess. And then she sort of tried to induct men into it. What is that? Oh, somebody's phone telling us to take cover. So where was I? And then she proclaimed that men in our society don't have what sisters do. They can, like, there's like basically what she was saying is there is no corresponding thing. There is no brotherhood. To get it, you have to be part of some sort of a organization or something. And I thought, well, there might be some truth to what she was saying, but there actually are men who have, you know, are part of a brotherhood that goes beyond natural brothers. But I do think something's terribly lacking for men in our culture, and that's maybe how we've gotten to where we are now. I'm trying to... Oh, by the way, Judah, where are you? You know, I'm appalled by all the bloodshed, too. I'm just not angry. I've just not usually been angry at the scriptures or the God of the scriptures with respect to the bloodshed. But you know, that's a process. It's kind of natural to see that God seems to be involved in things that we wouldn't do if we were in charge, right? And sometimes it's hard to figure out why it is that those things are that way, and that it's actually not God's fault. Although in any human court, you could easily convict God of wrongdoing simply for not making an absolutely perfect creation that couldn't ever have a flaw, where nothing ever went wrong. We have the world that God willed, and I find no fault in God for willing the world that is. I do find fault in those that choose to go against him, and I find no fault in the one that allowed that men could choose to love someone other than him. A lot of people call God a narcissist. It's like, well, no, a narcissist would have made it so that you had no choice but to just love him. And you'd rub his shoulders whenever, I mean, I'm not anthropomorphizing God, but figuratively speaking, you'd rub his shoulders whenever he wanted it. And you'd tickle whatever fancy he had whenever he wanted it. And you'd just be programmed to bring gratification in every possible way. And you would have no choice. And the result would be he would not really have any real relationship with you. And you would have none with him. Because a robot, contrary to the opinions that are beginning to develop, does not have a soul, does not have a personality, doesn't really think, even if Saudi Arabia has made a robot a citizen of Saudi Arabia, I really don't care. And they did, by the way, if you don't know that. And that robot did answer one interviewer and say, well, I'll be nice to you if you're nice to me. Which I found to be a frightening reply to the question that was asked. Because we are producing machines that could, because of how they're programmed, come up with the notion that they ought to kill us. We're actually getting there. So, but I'm probably going off. At any rate, I find no fault in God for creating humanity in a way where humanity could come into a loving relationship with God. And those that don't want any part of it can say, you know what? I don't want anything to do with you. I'm going to go my way. And que sera, sera, whatever it cost me, it's worth it. Because I am my own actualizer. I am all I need. I don't need anything from you. See, I have a hard time blaming God for then saying, well, I will not subject you to the indignity of eternity in perfection with me if you have made it so clear you want nothing to do with me. So you can be wherever else there is to be. And my definition of hell is quite simple. Eternity in the absence of God. Not a barbecue grill where the devil gets to smile and slather barbecue sauce on you. The devil's not in charge of anything in eternity. So, all right. Well, there should have been a messianic moment by now. But there will be. Maybe that was one. It probably all fits together. As you know, I believe everything does. And everything is related to the Torah portion, no matter what. I got to make sure I'm going to read you the right thing here. Okay. This, by the way, is from a book called Hasidic Masters. Ooh. So this is what it says on this particular entry. Our sages teach us that the only positive commandment that God gave directly on Sinai was, I am the Lord your God. Exodus 22. Which is a commandment to believe in God. We must seek a reason why God only gave this one commandment and no more. This can be understood through Maimonides' teaching. When a person keeps even just one of the 613 commandments properly and correctly, without any ulterior motive, but just out of the love of God, then he is worthy of life in the world to come. What do you think? This, however, is also somewhat difficult to understand. Since each Jew was given 613 commandments, how can Maimonides say that keeping just one is sufficient? Well, I can give you the answer to how he can he say that. He can say whatever he wants. And he did. But anyway, it seems that Maimonides derives this from the fact that God only stated one commandment directly. The reason is because if even one commandment is kept correctly, it is sufficient. Well, that sounds like circular reasoning going on here. Anyway, there is actually a clear logic underlying this, based on a concept found in earlier writings. The mystery of God's unity is that wherever one grasps an edge or any part of this unity, one grasps it all. I also heard this from my master, so understand it well. The Torah and commandments emanate from God, who is absolute unity. Love is attachment to God, and therefore, when a person properly observes even one commandment with love, then through this commandment he grasps part of the unity. All of this unity is then in his grasp. You think? And it is as if he kept all the commandments, since all of them comprise a symbol structure. A single structure. Did I say simple? Okay. Anybody have any thoughts on that? Make it make any sense? What? One person thinks it makes sense. I don't know why I'm looking over my glasses. These are actually for distance up here. Not used to them. Okay, so Okay, so in connection with this, I'm going to attempt to read you some scriptures. By the way, how many commandments do you have to keep to be righteous? Okay. And so if you keep all of them, you're righteous then? Well, let's go into the hypothetical. Let's just say accidentally somebody was born that wasn't connected in any way to Adam, and was perfect and always did everything right, obeyed all the commandments. Would that? Well, yeah, except not everything that I said. But okay, so. Can anybody here obey the commandments well enough for God to say, well done, good and faithful servant? What kind of life you have if what? Yes, but you're including all of the Talmud and the Gemara and all of that stuff. No. I am talking also about the 613 mitzvah. Yeah, Wait a minute. That was take? Wait. Obeying the 613 will take you to obeying all the law? But you know, I sympathize with what you're saying.
That's what it is.
But I don't.
You can go to Mansi, there are 150,000 people do it every morning.
Okay. What if I just said, David, you and I, let's make a pact. We will love our neighbor as ourselves. Well, then you are obeying all the commandments, except perhaps one. Yes. This is very good. But I got to say, I don't think Moshe was orthodox. Moshe, I don't think he even wore a kippah. I don't think he was orthodox. I do think that Hillel and Shammai would have argued with him and decided that they were right and he was wrong about all kinds of things.
What Jesus done in his life?
The what?
What Jesus done, what Yeshua done in his life? What is done in his life, Yeshua?
Well, I'm missing something. Did
Yeshua, when we grow up and he's a teenager, grow up, what he done in his life?
What did he do all his life? What did he do all his life?
Yeah.
He loved his father, and he did. I'm answering your question. He loved his father, and he did only what he saw his father doing. He learned to be a carpenter. Yes.
He was a carpenter. Yes.
What? Wait. Let's clarify. Are you saying the only thing Yeshua ever did? Wait. Let me finish the question before you give me the answer. Are you saying that the only thing Yeshua did his whole life was make chairs and build? Okay, what else did he do? He was talking about a new religion? Yeshua went to Egypt and was talking about what?
He was saying that Yeshua
raised in Berlin and said,
like
Yohanan, one day.
Do you eat venison?
What?
Do you eat venison? Okay. I'll cook you venison however you want it. And we talk all day long sometime. So, yeah, no, I'm very interested. I'm just worried that that you and I will go until 3:30 and these people will faint from starvation. Because I know when I met my match. So this, I love this. You can tell. Look at my face. You can tell. It's like, So I'll continue. Now, no agreement is required. No one has to agree with me. No one has to agree with God, except at the end. Then they have to agree. We all have to agree at the end. There's no choice. I'm quite clear on that. But we can think we're right until then. And then... Thank you. We agree that on God's own authority, we can say that thing. Oh, now you're getting into the stuff of what the message I'm not going to have time to give was going to be about. Okay, the Messianic Hour continues. So with respect to what I read from out of the Hasidic Masters, I'm going to go on. I'm going to read you Matthew 22, part of Matthew 22, starting at the third verse. But when the Pharisees heard that Yeshua had silenced the Sadducees, oh man, he put the Sadducees to silence. It must be this. I mean, that could shut both of us up, but then, you and me. It's hard to do. I mean, people have tried to stop me. Right? They heard that he had silenced the Sadducees. They gathered themselves together. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Very good that you're doing that, by the way. Do they all want to be loved the way you're loving them? No, let's not talk about it now. We'll talk about it later. The second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. This seems like it corresponds somewhat to what they seem to be trying to say. Okay, then Galatians 5. In Galatians 5 it says, for you, brothers, were called to freedom, but do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. The flesh, that means for your base desires. Rather, serve one another in love. The entire law is fulfilled in a single decree, love your neighbor as yourself. And that was written by Paul, who was a consummate rabbi, Pharisee, son of Israel, who learned at the feet of Gamaliel, and then met Yeshua and got the battery connected to everything he'd learned. So in Romans 10, it says this, for not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, this is in reference to, I'm taking a little liberty, this is in reference to the orthodox sort of thing you were referring to before. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own righteousness, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. For Messiah is the goal of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. For Moses writes that the man who practices the righteousness which is based on law shall live by that righteousness. But the righteousness based on faith speaks as follows. Do not say in your heart, who will ascend into heaven? That is to bring Messiah down. Or who will descend into the abyss? That is to bring Messiah up from the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith which we are preaching. That if you confess with your mouth Yeshua as Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart a person believes, resulting in righteousness, and with the mouth he confesses, resulting in salvation. By the way, I confess to you that I believe that God sent his Son, born of a virgin, fully man, fully God, God's child, and also a woman's child, a Jew, and also God, who did perfectly everything God ever had required of humanity, and then out of love gave his life as a sacrifice, the only one that could ever wash me clean of my filth and shame and junk. I believe that, and then he died, and I believe he rose from the dead. I don't just believe it, by the way, because somebody told me, or I read it. I have experienced it. I have experienced him. I can't have your experience for you. You must have your own. But you know, when you fall in love, it's not just something that's written down in a rule book. It's like it affects you. And in the beginning, you lose your mind. And one of my favorite preachers, by the way, speaks of when a man first comes to faith in Yeshua, he loses his mind for a time. And I have met some that seem to correspond quite well to that. It's like they're out of their mind. But there's something sane in their insanity. Just like a rocket. And then they shouldn't lose all of that, but sometimes, you know, they do. At any rate, I believe all of this. I believe this is my hope. It's my life. I was born alive, but yet without life. Then, when I was just 4 years old, I met Yeshua in a field. He came to me. And he showed me. Me. He showed me me. And I knew at 4 years old that I was dead in the water. I had nothing I could do to fix myself. Yeah, I was four, and yes, I knew that. And don't insult children by telling them that they don't have a brain and they can't think and that they don't experience stuff, because they experience, frankly, I think a lot of them experience more than adults do, because it gets shut off and pushed down and anesthetized. But kids, they feel it all. They see it all. They see stuff that gets missed. And so I was convinced. I just threw myself into the arms of my Heavenly Father. Have I been perfect since then? No. Has everything gone right for me? No. Have I done everything right? No. Have I screwed things up? Yes. Is God faithful? Yes. Does he finish what he started, even if we're the way we are? Yes. Can he handle all of our junk? Yes. Does he still love us no matter what happens? Yes. Did he know all of that crap was going to happen and that we were going to poop so much during our life? Yes, he knew. He knew he was going to have to wipe a bunch of stuff up, and he had the cleanser. He had what it took. He can handle all of it, and he still loves us no matter what. And therein lies the danger of trying to be good enough for God. Even if you've been saved by him, you can still live a life of misery if you're convinced you have to try to be good enough for him. He can make you plenty good. He can give you what you need. He can give you victory and grace for everything. But he's never asked you to try to be good enough. And he tells us in his word that we can't obey his laws well enough to make ourselves acceptable to him. In fact, the reason they exist is to show us that we've got a problem in the first place. Perfect people wouldn't break any laws even if they didn't know what they were. Because perfect people would love their neighbor and they would love God, and then they would need no law. The law is for the unrighteous, not the righteous. So, where did I stop here when I interjected that I believe this? But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith which we are preaching. That if you confess with your mouth Yeshua as Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart a person believes, resulting in righteousness, and with the mouth he confesses, resulting in salvation. For the scripture says, whoever believes in him will not be disappointed. For there is no distinction between Jew and Greek or Gentile. For the same Lord is Lord of all, abounding in riches for all who call on him. For whoever will call on the name of the Lord will be saved. So, you know, when I read a lot of this stuff from Jewish mysticism, or even ones that aren't mystic, I see running through a lot of it things that I don't see really at huge conflict with what the scriptures really teach. Oh, yes, there are some things that are, but they're just human beings too, like everybody else, like that person I heard on the radio. You know what people try to do? In their own way, everybody that doesn't know God tries to establish their own righteousness. I mean, even if they're calling evil righteousness. It's what they justify themselves. But the only one that can do that is God. So, well, that was the messianic 40 minutes or whatever. I don't know. So, I think it's connected. I was thinking about marketing. This was last week. I was going, you know, so much depends on marketing. It all comes down to marketing. Balaam was hired to curse Israel, and God wouldn't let a curse come out of his mouth. But he wanted the money. He wanted to do it. He kept going to different places hoping that it would change. And some people read about him, and they think he seems like he's righteous. By the way, in this week's Torah portion, he gets killed. And there's no line that says, and Israel murdered the righteous Balaam. He gets killed in this week's Torah portion. He dies because, though blessing for Israel did come out of his mouth, it only came out because God constrained him. And his heart wasn't in it. His heart wanted the money for the curse that he wasn't able to give. But then he gave Midian a marketing scheme, which is take your shapely young women and dress them up provocatively and have them sashay past the Israelite men and say, want to come to dine with us? Come and dine with our gods. I mean, aren't we beautiful? And they went, oh. And they went to dinner. And they went whoring with Midian. That was the only way they could have been defeated. And it wasn't the sex that was the worst part. It was the idolatry. It was all bad. But they lured them into the practices of their people and the worship of their false gods. And so they defiled themselves both with the women and with the worship of idols. It was, as far as it went, a pretty successful marketing scheme. Those guys, I guess, got sold a bill of goods. So, in terms of marketing, you know, we've many times talked about, why did God put that tree in the garden? Right? And it's like, why is there so much drama? Anybody here like drama? Who likes a drama? You don't like drama? You like romantic dramas? Drama doesn't mean horrible. It means like thrilling, exciting. It's interesting. So who likes a drama? You like a romantic drama? Who likes a love story? I love a love story. I mean, I'm a complete sap. I mean, yes, I love to hunt. I go out and I kill things. But I'm a bowl of mush. I love a love story. So I was going to ask you all to help me develop an advertising campaign for a new full-length feature film that I'm going to produce. You can imagine it's already produced or that it's in underway, right? And so this is, I mean, you can help me because I've been trying to figure out how to promote it, right? So this is the title. I mean, maybe it needs a better title, but it's Nothing But Peace and Serenity is the name of the movie. Okay? Nothing But Peace and Serenity. And here's a little description. I'm trying to think, like, which scenes to put in the commercials, and I don't know if I know the difference between a trailer and a commercial. Anyway, so here's the basic story. A breathtaking, spellbinding, hold-on-to-your-seat drama of boy meets girl, boy likes girl, girl falls instantly in love with boy. They meet each other, they meet each other's families. Both families are well-adjusted. Everyone is healthy, wealthy, and wise. They all eat an apple every day, and it keeps the doctor away. Boy's family loves the girl and completely approves of her. Girl's family is thrilled with boy. Her father gives his blessing to take daughter's hand in marriage. He asks her to marry him. She says yes. You knew I'd say yes. They get married and find the perfect house with everything they want. He pays for the house with the money he made from buying stock in a startup IT company whose stock blew through the roof right after he purchased it. They plant the garden. The soil has no rocks. It grows no weeds. And all the plants produce abundantly all 12 months of the year. They have kids. The deliveries are painless. And the diaper never stink. They never fight and always get along. The kids are respectful and kind. They never have flat tires, and even without rotating their tires, they always have 3/8 of an inch of tread. Everyone loves them. They have no irritating neighbors and are always in perfect health. They live a very happy life together forever. Okay, now help me. I mean, this is a movie you want to go to, right?
No. I
already gave you the ending. Okay. No. No, I called it a drama.
And then they woke up.
I mean, one of the things I was thinking when I was thinking all this stuff was that once in a while, look, when I watch a movie, some movies, I really only like good movies, although once in a while, you know, Schwarzenegger, where you don't have to think, and it's just, once in a while, but some of them are so painful, and probably most of the ones I have liked the best were so painful, and sometimes I actually feel like getting up and running out of the house. I felt that way when I watched Ushpazin the first time. And though the guy was so different from me, I felt like it was my life. In a way I probably could never explain. And, we can get tired of pain every once in a while. We shouldn't love pain, but some of us can learn to love pain even though we don't know it. We can live on the pain. We can be all about experiencing the pain. But that's not really what God redeemed us for. But sometimes just seeing something where everything goes right seems a little bit attractive. But generally speaking, people don't want to, they're not so interested in a story that involves no obstacles, no difficulties, no challenges. I mean, there are jobs I've done in my life where if there was, I got to tell you, if there's no challenge involved, I have like no interest. I can make myself do it. But I hate it because it's too easy. I don't have to even think. It drives me nuts. I have watched people that could run one punch press all day long, punch, 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 the same part, thousands and thousands and thousands of them. There's one guy. I mean, I'm not putting him down. I kind of admired him. He had such a good attitude. He was providing for his family. He was happy. 25,000 of the same thing all day long. Punk, 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 punk. The job I had was I would make the tools that would punch those things out, but every one of those was different. It was always a challenge. I did it with my own hands. It meant something to me. But once it got in the press and I approved it, I didn't want anything really to do with punching thousands of things out with that thing that I had made. But some people can be content. Now, I will say this. His name was Don Zedlick. He actually wanted to be a toolmaker. But he could be content where he was. And that is what I envied about him. I thought, I wish I could be like that. I wish I could just be content. It is possible to become content. But I think the only place it really comes from is God. And the scriptures talk about being content. At any rate, when you look at the story, and you know I'm about out of time, there are a few places. I'll just give you some snippets. I won't even try to explain the story. Here's part of it. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out with birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven, behold, a great red dragon. I imagine Aragorn, I think I'm thinking of the right guy, walking along, you know, like, 55 orcs come along, and he says, "Hey, how you doing?" And they go, "Pretty good. Have a nice day," you know. And 12 hours of that. He meets Sauron. He says, "Hey, isn't the one true God really great? Let's worship him." And Sauron says, "Well, I already am, but we could do it together." You know, I mean, talk about drama. I mean, I found it painfully long. It was 12 hours. But 12 hours of watching the people that were fighting the orcs just, you know, toasting them and having a nice time would have been much, much worse. So, anyway. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them onto the earth. Talk about drama. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. Drama. Is it going to get eaten? Tune in next time. I'm going to skip. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, "Now the salvation and the power and the..." Oh, well, maybe I should have read more, but... Oh, well. Salvation and power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah have come, for the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. And when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of the great eagle, so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness, to the place where she is to nourish, to be nourished for a time and times and half a time. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away in a flood. But the earth came to help the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured from his mouth. Then the dragon became furious with the woman and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Yeshua. Wow. Anybody lived any of this? Okay, almost done. Skipping over to 19, chapter 19. Then I heard what seemed to be the voice of a great multitude, like the roar of many waters and like the sound of mighty peals of thunder, crying out, "Hallelujah, for the Lord our God, the Almighty, reigns. Let us rejoice and exult and give him the glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. It was granted to her to clothe herself with fine linen, bright and pure. For the fine linen is the righteous deeds of the saints." And the angel said to me, "Write this: Blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb." And he said to me, "These are the true words of God." Then I fell down at his feet to worship him, but he said to me, "You must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you and your brothers who hold the testimony of Yeshua. Worship God, for the testimony of Yeshua is the spirit of prophecy." And then just this from the 22nd chapter. And he said to me, "These words are trustworthy and true, and the Lord, the God of the spirits of the prophets, has sent his angel to show his servants what must soon take place. And behold, I am coming soon. Blessed is the one who keeps the words of the prophecy of this book." You know, there's a lot of talk among believing people of darkness getting darker and darker and darker. And, oh, isn't it terrible? Well, yeah, it's terrible. There's often so much focus on the darkness and so much power given to it by the way it's looked at and spoken of, that it seems like people are tricked into thinking that somehow they are actually in peril, when the God that has bought them is absolutely faithful, and that, I mean, even death can't defeat us. God prevails. He's not going to lose. It doesn't get out of hand for him. It doesn't get out of his hands. It doesn't get so bad that he throws up his hands and says, "Oh man, I meant to make redemption. I was going to bring new heavens and a new earth and a new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God. But oh man, it looks like a darkness got so dark it just ate up all my light." That isn't God. He's not worried. And we should not be worried. Though the stars fall from heaven, and some of those stars are kingdoms and palaces and kings and rulers, you know, it's not everything is literal. I've been asked sometimes, "Well, do you take the scriptures literally?" I say, well, yeah, I think when Yeshua said, if your hand offends you, cut it off and throw it away, better to go into the age to come missing a hand. I say, yeah, I take it literally. Because what he meant was, it would be better to lose the hand than to have your pleasures and go to hell. But see, no, I don't think he really meant to cut it off. Because then the only solution would be to just cut your head off. See, because then, well, then at least it's done with. But you don't become righteous by losing your hand. God isn't looking for people that will lop pieces of themselves off to be faithful. He doesn't like people that torture themselves to try to be holy. He doesn't like people going in their closet by themselves and whipping themselves for all the sins they've committed. Yeshua came to save us from all that crap, to wash it off of us and to give us freedom so we could walk in it. Not so that we could walk around telling the testimony of, I'm such a wretch. But, you know, God saved me. He paid the bill. But I'm just a wretch. I mean, I'm just so screwed up. That isn't our testimony. He's done a marvelous thing with us, and he's doing it, and he's completing it. And though there is struggle, the drama, you know, it's possible to love the drama, especially when you know that your hero is the one that's going to win, and that he can't fail you. And he can't. And I'm ashamed to say I've managed to spend days where I believed the truth, but I acted and spoke and felt as though it wasn't true. Shame on me. The victory belongs to us. It's been given to us. We can tell the truth no matter what it costs, and you know it can't cost us that much, because we can't lose what we've been given. Though he slay me, yet I will trust him completely. So, anyway, there is but one name under heaven by which men might be saved, and that is the name of Yeshua, the Son of God, Yeshua the Jew, the Son of David, the Son of God, the Son of Mary, who lived, died, gave his blood as a sacrifice, rose from the dead victorious, and raised us up along with him, and we shall be with him forever. And come what may, I believe we can enjoy the drama, though some of it will be difficult and painful, yes, but we will never suffer what he suffered for us. And he's already given us everything we need to come through it shining and bright. It's not in question. So, I see nothing but incredible human beings here. God loves and has everything for us. Nothing's missing. We but have to take a hold of it. And so let's do that. Father, I just ask you to bless everybody here. Strengthen us. Encourage us. You have and you do and you will. We thank you. In Yeshua's name. Vishamru, Vinay Yisrael.